The National Museum of American History celebrates a big birthday this year. It's now 50 years old. Federal News Radio takes a look at the museum's past and present through a special web feature launched this morning. Our web team members Michael O'Connell and Julia Ziegler share details.
It's really fun to take a look back in history, and I think one of the best parts of Mike's report that you're going to see are all of the old photos that he's brought together. And what you're going to see when you go to the site this morning are photos of the museum being built. There is this great photo. It's my favorite one of the bunch, and he's got about 40 of them, I think, Mike.
Yeah.
And it's this photo of Frank Taylor, and he was the head of the museum back in the day when it was being built. And he's standing on the fifth floor terrace of the Smithsonian, and he's literally looking up at this half-built structure, and you can see the Washington Monument in the background. And it's this, just this great kind of moment in history. And there are tons of these photos. Mike also has photos in there from the museum dedication in 1964. So, of course, it's great to see all the women's and men's fashions of the time. And kind of a nice representation of kind of, you know, what the museum looks like today and what's there today, and then exhibits of the past. And the other great thing that people are going to find when they go to the site this morning is Mike's story. And he can talk a little bit more about that. But I just think it's, a great look back in history at why this museum was built.
Yeah. Mike, first tell me, where do the photos come from?
The photos came from the Smithsonian Archives, the Smithsonian Museum's collection itself. They provided me a lot of that material. And then I also went and took some photos of my own to sort of supplement that.
Okay. So tell me about the story. Tell me about the package as you put it together.
Well, the story that Julie is referring to in particular is one that has to do with Frank Taylor, who was kind of this driving force to get the museum built. After World War II, there was this sort of push to create a national museum that was sort of dedicated to technology. And they launched this Museum of Technology and American History. So it was sort of a long, drawn-out process. Actually, it had gone back many decades. And when they got sort of into the home stretch, one of the things that Frank wanted to do was to sort of honor the people who had actually put in the hours for building the museum. And he talked to his boss, the head of the Smithsonian, and said that, you know, before we open the doors officially to the public, can I have a party for the staff, for the people who not only the carpenters and the people who put the exhibits together, but, you know, just everybody who had some contribution to it. So the night before, the night before the doors opened to the museum, he was given permission to have this this party. And you've got to sort of imagine, if you've ever been to this museum, it's this huge cavernous structure, and they have all these new exhibits out there, and it's empty except for the people who and their families who worked on it, actually. And so I found this story going through the Smithsonian Archives. They had done an interview with Frank Taylor, and he had recalled years later that this was probably one of the happiest moments of his life. And he sort of described it as, you know, it was a moonlit night. The museum was, you know, large and empty, and all these little families got to walk through and see what their fathers and the mothers had worked on to create this huge structure. And then when they were all done with the tour, they ended up in the cafeteria, and, you know, the Marriott Corporation was in charge of the cafeteria, and so they took advantage of this to test out their serving facilities, and they provided cookies and cider. And they looked out on this large window, if you've ever been into that museum, in the cafeteria, this large window that looks out southwards towards the Washington Monument. So imagine the moon in the sky next to the Washington Monument. It was just sort of a wonderful picture, and it's easy to see why it was one of his most cherished memories.
Yeah, I have to say, when I look at that photo, the one that Julia mentioned of the almost-built museum and then the Washington Monument in the background, it's like there's nobody there. You feel like D.C. is a quieter, even more suburban-type place than it is now.
Well, I'm sorry. One of the things I found out when they were constructing it was actually kind of controversial when they designed it, because it was the first real modern design building on the mall. So it had sort of this reputation of innovation and something different. And so it was kind of surprised a lot of people.
One of the other things I wanted to add to the story that Mike was telling about Frank Taylor is that, and opening it to the federal employees the night before the museum opened to the public, was there was a little bit of pushback. And they didn't necessarily want to open it up to the employees the night before because the actual opening for the public was going to include all these big wigs and people coming to town. But Frank got his way.
Right.
And then therefore the federal employees who built it were able to go in first. And I just thought that was a really cool story. About, you know, I mean, federal employees are the people we cover every day. And here's an example back in history where, you know, they got a little something for the work that they did.
And for a history museum, it was actually open at a very historic, very tumultuous time in our history. It was just a few months after the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, this is the point where, you know, President Johnson is sort of, you know, pulling his power together to sort of launch his administration. And he's the one who delivered the opening day speech the next morning after this party. So it was, like I said, it was a lot going on in America at that moment.
Well, and you also said that the museum had technology in the name. Was it always envisioned as a history museum then?
Yeah, actually it was, and it was sort of a strange progress to get to that point. In the 1920s and 30s, there was a sort of second industrial revolution where you had a lot of new technology like radio and new materials like plastic that came along, and America was sort of feeling its strength as a world power, and they sort of, you know, had that sort of new world envy. They didn't feel that they were being represented on the larger stage scientifically, so they launched this museum to. Or they planned it as a technology museum and they wedded it with history because the original collection of the Smithsonian actually had, you know, presidential paraphernalia like, you know, general's uniforms, Thomas Jefferson's desk, things like that. And they decided that they wanted to bring that together into that museum. So it was sort of an odd marriage at the beginning. And eventually, though, that changed as the perception of what history was and they sort of redefined what the role of that museum was.
Yeah, now you can go there and see Julia Child's kitchen.
Yes.
And Michelle Obama's inaugural gown.
Dorothy's slippers, let's not forget those,
the
my
Fonzie's
personal
jacket.
Favorite.
And Mike, you went there recently. I just want to ask you, I'm just curious, what exhibit struck you?
Actually, strangely enough, not that I'm a huge fan or anything, but Julia Child's kitchen was kind of interesting. I like the way that they presented it. It is sort of a recreation. You're actually looking through the windows of her kitchen and seeing the things. And behind you, they're playing a video of one of her broadcasts. It's sort of a, you know, very immersive, surprisingly immersive. I was surprised.
I'm also a big fan of the Star Spangled Banner, and I think it's also because of how it has to be set up for preservation purposes. When you walk in to see it, you walk into a dark room, and that, you know, they have to have the lighting that way so that it doesn't hurt the flag and all of these things, but the emotion I think when you walk into that room, and Mike, you've been there, you know, in recent days as compared to my last visit was last summer, but you do get this really, I don't know, maybe patriotic feeling when you walk into that room and you see this massive flag laid out. It's kind of awe-inspiring.
It is very impressive. And one of the things that, you know, the very first weekend that I actually came to Washington, D.C. with my wife, my newlywed wife, one of the first museums we went into was the American History Museum back in 1983. And at that time, they had this huge pendulum that harkens back to its science roots, that sort of showed, you know, they set it up every day so that the pendulum would go and knock over a little peg. And what that did was it would show that the Earth was actually revolving. And they took that down a few years ago, but the museum is going to have a documentary and a special exhibit. They're going to have that pendulum on display. They're not going to put it up because that's too expensive, and some of the pegs. And some examples of some of the older exhibits had over the years. And that exhibit's going to open on May 16th, and the public can get a sort of picture of how the museum has changed in its 50 years.
A quick fun fact, as Mike was saying, the pendulum is not up right now. Only 3% of the museum's entire collection is on display at one time. I mean, you know how massive that museum is. And so to know that you're only seeing 3% of what they actually have is, I don't know, it blows my mind. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you want to go through a warehouse, right? Wouldn't
yeah.
that be cool?
3.3 million artifacts.
And they do their best to try to bring things out on in a regular rotation to sort of highlight what the collection is, but also to sort of, in response to, you know, if there's something in the news or if there's some sort of theme that people want to explore, then they'll go into the collection. It's sort of something they're able to draw from.